Christian cuss words. I watched that video, and I must admit to you that I've used a couple of them. So, but today is the final sermon in the series, It's My Message, with the emphasis on mess. And we're going to take a look at a guy who realizes his mess in the very presence of God. If you'd like, go ahead and turn in your Bibles to Isaiah, the 6th chapter. Starting in verse 1, I'm going to go through 7 on this first part. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord seated on the throne, high and exalted, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphs, each with 6 wings. With 2 wings they covered their faces, and with 2 they covered their feet, and with 2 they were flying. And they were calling out to one another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of His glory." At the sound of their voices, the doorpost and the threshold shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. "Woe to me," I cried, "I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty." Then one of the seraphs flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. And with it he touched my mouth, and he said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away, and your sin atoned for." When I studied at Northern Kentucky University, in the business university there, I had a class that dealt almost entirely with just business terminology, business jargon, words that if you weren't in that realm, you probably wouldn't know exactly what it means. And I found that all businesses have that. If you work in a factory or any kind of distributing plant or whatever, you have terminology in there that is unique to your place of employment. We have that here at the church too. We use jargon. We use words that are unique to us, and sometimes we don't really know the definition of that. We use it, but we don't fully understand it. One of them that we use quite often is holy. We have the Holy Bible. God is holy. We're called to be holy. We're told to be holy. In 1 Peter 1:15 and 16, it says, "But just as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. For it is written, 'Be holy because I am holy.'" So we use this word, but we don't always really fully think about what that means to be holy. Being holy is being dedicated or consecrated to God for a religious purpose, being set apart with a special purpose. Who do you think of when you think of being set apart for a special purpose? I think in recent history, one of the people that just glaringly stands out was Mother Teresa. She arrived in India with what would have been the equivalent of 75 cents. And with her selflessness, she built a lasting impression, one of the largest foundations to deal with poverty and people who are dying of disease. Her influence is world renowned. But even as holy as she was, she's not holy like God is holy. When I was researching this message, I came across a minister by the name of Dan Meyer who was writing on the same text. And he wrote this: "I saw an insect crawling across the floor of my study when I was writing this message. I walked right by it, and the bug froze in its tracks. Was this because the insect really understood the difference between me and it? Do you think it could have possibly taken in anything more than the fact that the edge of my shoe was colossally larger than it was? Staring at life from only 3 millimeters high, do you think it could understand what it was to move through the world at 6'4"? Do you suppose that the insect had the capacity to perceive, to grasp between the nerve bundles in its head, the power that even my ordinary human mind had. Even if my mind has at least the potential to compose literature, engineer skyscrapers, design a space shuttle, or unravel the working genus, what do you suppose the capacity of the creator of the universe? God is far beyond me, infinitely more than I was to that bug. Later on in this same book, Isaiah writes for us, "My thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are my ways your ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts." God is holy. He is set apart. But He wants you to be holy as well. When we see holiness or glimpses of it, we have an emotional response to it. We're just built that way. C.S. Lewis writes in Letters to an American Lady, "How little people know who think that holiness is dull. When one meets the real thing, it is irresistible." But isn't that kind of like us? We think that if we live according to God's rules and what He wants us to do, that somehow that lessens the fun we can have in life. That if we live holy lives, that somehow we're just not going to have the good time that everybody else has. People can get emotional when they see it, even in movies. If you see a war movie where somebody does a self-sacrificing thing and they go in against all odds to bring out a hurt friend, our heart kind of wells up with that. Or even in the movie Titanic, when he stays in the water so she can stay on the thing and float and live. We respond to that emotionally because it's moments where we get a small glimpse of something that's bigger than ourselves. We're even born with the ability to see it. We know right from wrong. I think we can all agree that walking up to someone and shooting them is wrong. Or that taking something from someone is wrong. But we're also born with human nature. And it allows us to do it anyway. And that's why we have mass shootings. And there's theft that we hear about all the time. God calls us to be holy. He wants us to be holy. He designed us for that. And yet there's this second nature that we have that is just not. And we feed that human nature. It's hard not to. We do selfish things. We do things that bring us instant gratification. Sin is exciting. And so we gravitate towards it. Let's read the rest of the chapter here. Again, starting in verse 8. "Then I heard a voice of the Lord saying, 'Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?' And I said, 'Here I am, send me.' He said, 'Go and tell this people, be ever hearing and never understanding, be ever seeing but never perceiving. Make the hearts of the people calloused. Make their ears dull and close their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and turn and be healed.' And then I said, 'For how long, O Lord?' And He answered, 'Until the city lies ruined and without inhabitant, until the houses are left deserted and the fields are ruined and ravaged, until the Lord has sent everyone far away and the land is utterly forsaken. And though a tenth remains in the land, it will again be laid to waste. But as the terebinth and the oak leave stumps where they are cut down, so the holy seed will be the stamp in the land, or stump in the land." So a little background on Isaiah. Isaiah comes and he ministers to the southern kingdom. After David, it gets passed to Solomon. And then after Solomon, for a short time, his son rules, but he doesn't do right in the eyes of the Lord. And so 10 of the northern tribes, they break off from the king. and they form their own country, and they keep the name Israel. And so the southern kingdom, they keep the name, or they take the name Judah. And so the northern kingdom, they really didn't have any good kings after that. They were just, it was pretty much bad the whole time. They were all bad. But it started off with the guy Jeroboam, the first king. He was pretty smart as a guy. Not very holy in that he was going to follow God. And so he knows that Jerusalem is there in Judea, and he said, you know, it's going to be bad. If they go and worship there, he's going to have more authority as a king because the temple's there. So he comes up with this idea to build the little temples of false gods. And so all of Israel, the 10 tribes, they go into just a horrible time of idolatry, and they're pulled to that. The problem is the southern kingdom sees what they're doing, and instead of staying firm with God, they go, hey, that sounds great. That's more convenient. That's what I want. I get to worship God, or a God, in this way. And so they start having idolatry. And what we read here is God judging them. He's bringing judgment on Israel, on Judah. Isaiah was around for 5 kings during his time as a prophet. And God pronounced judgment at this time for Israel. But Isaiah, in his most defining moment, I think, in his life, says, here I am, send me. In the very presence of God, he says, I'll do it, I'll go. And that's not a light thing. He was willing to go. It was hard. It cost him stuff. He was older. He was a scribe. He had his job. He had his career. He knew who he was, his identity. And that all got shaken up. He certainly gave up his popularity. His message was that of bad news. I found a little saying that says, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but it beats being the one who receives it. There's kind of a funny story of bad news. There's 3 guys that I'm told were sitting around in a waiting room, and their wives were in labor. And they kind of were talking, just passing time. And so the first one, she called up, the nurse came out, and she called the first one up, and she said, hey, wanted to let you know, congratulations, you have twins. And he kind of chuckled and said, wow, that's pretty neat. He said, I play for the twins, and so, you know, have a set of twins, play for the twins. That's unique. A while later, comes out and calls the next guy up, and he says to him, he said, you have triplets. You've had triplets. You know, congratulations. He said, well, that's very interesting. He said, I work for 3M, and I have triplets. And the third guy, they look over at him, and he starts to get very white and pale. And the nurse goes and says, are you okay, sir? And he said, I don't know. You said, you know, he had twins and he plays for the twins, and you know, he has triplets and he works for 3M. And she's like, yeah, what does that have to do with anything? He said, well, I work for 7-Up. So I guess that could be bad news if you weren't prepared for that. But this was not a message of joy that he had to give. It was a hard message that he had to give to the people. They were going to be hearing, but not understanding it. They would see him, but they wouldn't perceive it. It's a job that won't turn out great. You're going to feel like you're talking to a wall. He had a powerful message of judgment and hope, but most didn't listen to him. It's been said about trees and prophets that they share at least one important characteristic, that they are both planted for the future. So Isaiah answers this call. And because he does this, because he's willing to change everything and follow God completely. He's considered the greatest Old Testament prophet. He's quoted at least 50 times in the New Testament. And he was not worthy by his own admission. But God fixed his unclean lips and used him in a powerful way. So today, what is your message? What is your mess? What's your problem? Is it baggage that you're holding on to? Is sin from the past that haunts you? Concept or criticism from childhood that makes you think you are somebody you're not? Abuse? Do you need to come to God, take it to Him, and let Him clean you up? I think grace is often clearly seen in other people. We can step back from afar and we can see, oh, God's forgiven them. But it's harder for us to recognize it in our own life. And it's even more hard to accept it. But God wants you to reach people. He wants you, the way you're broken, to reach other people. And the way that I'm broken, to reach a different set of people. And if we all do that, He uses all of us to make His message known, to bring people into a relationship with Him. Your message might be something that you're going through currently in life. In your weakness, He's strong. I think of like a cloth that when it's wearing real thin, you start to see it. You can see through to the other side. God's there. He can give you strength. But how do you develop a message? It's one thing to just stand up here and say, take your message. What's your message? Go share that with people. Now, how do you do that? I think the first thing you can do is to write your testimony, your story of why and what it is that compels you to follow Christ. If you need help with that, ideas about that, how to go about it, Google it. There is a ton of stuff on how to write a Christian testimony and ideas for that. But you should do that. Have that ready. The second thing I would advise to you is be there in the bad times. People are almost always willing to listen to your opinion if you've walked with them through tough times. And maybe it's something that you've gone through in your life. If you do that, it's easier to lead others through something that you've been through already. Actually, Nicole got to go on a mission trip that we had been planning for about 2 years. And it was a trip to Honduras to help kids with cancer. We were going to put on a camp for them. And I wasn't able to go, but the guy that we had to do the speaking, he's fought cancer since he was a child. And in his battle, and he's gone through the chemo and all this stuff, but in his battle, he ended up losing his leg. So he's an amputee. And throughout it all, he's kept a good attitude about it. But he was able to go and to share his message to those kids. And I couldn't have done that with the same impact that he did. And nobody else on that trip could have had the same impact when he was speaking to them because he had gone through it. One of the things that really stuck with me was when he came back, I went to pick up the team and we were talking about everything and I was asking how things went. And he said to me, he said, I know now why I had cancer. And I don't think that God gave him cancer so that he could go and speak at this 1 week of camp. But I do think because he turned his life over to God and said, you're in charge and use me however you want. God was able to use his mess, his problem, to speak in a very powerful way. And God blessed him in that way to be able to do that. The third thing I would suggest to you is read and study. A great book is called Transforming Neighborhoods, A Life at a Time. And it walks through how Jesus dealt with different people, difficult people, some of them, ones who are hurting, one who are skeptic, whatever the situation is. He goes through and shows you how Jesus deals with that. It's a great personal one. And I tell the youth this all the time. If you're not moving forward in your faith, you're dying. There is no plateau. There is no, I can put a pin in it and we're okay. If you're not actively growing in your faith, then you're dying. If you're not actively seeking out, who can I share the good news of Christ with? You're not living out the call that God has given us. So, where are you willing to go? Is the next thing to look at. Will you travel? Will you do short-term mission trips? Full-time service in the field? There's a lot of younger people in here, and maybe that's something that you haven't considered, or maybe it's something you have thought about, to go and dedicate your life to God sharing. Maybe it's not necessarily the younger people. Isaiah was older when he changed his vocation. Maybe it's something that God's pressing on your heart to do something like this. I have a friend who's a year older than me, and he's getting ready to retire into the mission field. He went directly out of high school into the armed services, and he's going to be retiring this next year, and he's decided that's how he and his family are going to do the next chapter of their life. They're going to spend that in full-time missions. And then some of you go, I'm not comfortable with that. I'm not going to go anywhere. And that's okay too. Where are you already at? Do you know your neighbors besides just waving at them as you go by? Do you purposely go and talk to them for that purpose of sharing Christ? How about the people you work with? Are they saved? Do they know you are? What about your family? That's a hard one. I'm pretty sure that I know there's some people in my family who aren't saved. That's a hard conversation to have. That's difficult to go to a family reunion and be like, hey, I want to talk to you about Jesus because I don't think you're living right in life. God is holy and set apart. And He calls for us to be holy, to lead others to Him. When Isaiah found himself in the presence of God, his first thought was his mouth was unclean. His words were unholy. Yet when God called for someone to go and carry on His word, Isaiah responded, "Here I am, send me." Let God take your mess and make it a message. God uses imperfect people. He meets us at a point of where our need is, just like He did for Isaiah. We're all imperfect in different ways, and He uses it to reach all sorts of different people. Maybe you need to come today and let God clean you for the first time and accept Him in your life in baptism. Maybe you need to renew your commitment to reach the lost in your life and to say, "Here I am, send me."